This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello everyone, this is Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conkers3 on Twitter, and I'm here with my great colleague Peter at Wheelie Dealer. This is a Twin Peaks podcast brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, and we're delighted to be at Mellow Virtual, the Mellow event. David Strett has put on an absolutely fantastic event for everybody. Richard, Georgina, Anne, and all the team have put this together, and it's been absolutely phenomenal so far. So hopefully Pete and I will not disgrace ourselves and bring it down.
Not too much.
So hello everyone, thank you for joining this Twin Peaks podcast with Pete and I, and we're delighted to be here. So I'm going to put it over to Pete now because I'm a bit exhausted from this morning, and I'll find out what we're going to talk about. This is normally how it goes. For those that haven't met us before, I'm based in Leicestershire and Peter is based in Windsor. We're never together when we discuss this, and we very rarely have a discussion about what topics and what we're going to talk about. We just...
Yeah, it's totally unscripted, and we do it over, what do we use? Skype, don't we? Yeah.
We use Skype.
We do it over Skype. It's completely unscripted, and it just goes wherever it goes.
It goes where it goes.
Sometimes it gets a bit dangerous, and, you know, that's what happens.
And Pete invariably gets me to trouble or puts me at risk. So please bear with us, because this is going to be a similar sort of situation. What we're going to ask you guys and ladies to do is, there is a button that you've got there for Q&A, and if you wish to ask us any questions, please feel free to do that. What we're going to try and do is intersperse the questions and answer some of the questions as we're going along. So feel free. Obviously, we can't give advice regarding your investments, your stocks and shares, but if there's some general questions, we can give you some sort of steer as to what we're thinking and what our thoughts are. So Pete, where are you going to start this particular podcast?
Well, I think the obvious thing we need to do is just sort of do the usual market stuff and whatever. And then probably drift into what we're personally doing with, you know, how we see the markets and what we're doing with our stocks and portfolios. And to see, you know, what we think is likely to be happening over the next few weeks, months, whatever, really. So, the first thing that I want to say is that I've noticed we've got a question here saying, why? It's a question from Ewan. And it says, moving averages, why do you like the 13 and 21? But actually, that links really well into what we want to talk about, because last night, the FTSE 100 closed, and I think the FTSE 250 did a similar thing also, where they did a 13/21 day exponential moving average. It's important to notice the exponential. Bearcross, which I tend to find is a pretty good predictor of falls to come. Likewise, when it crosses the other way and you get a bull cross, that's a predictor of rises. Now, I had a look into this last night. I thought I'll just, you know, try and get a feel for what that really means. And I look back to when we had the crash a few months ago when things went really smelly. And what happened there was we got the 13/21 EMA bear cross. We then had, say, 2-3 weeks or something where it was sort of wiggling around. But the point was the 13-day EMA stayed below the 21-day EMA. The important thing to realize with EMAs is that they're weighted moving averages. So they put more weight, more importance to the most recent days, yeah? Whereas a normal moving average just smooths it over the whole period. So what we had last time was that you had like 3 or 4 weeks after the bear cross, then the markets tanked. Now, when I look at the situation today and where we are now, I think earlier today, I mean, we're recording this at about, 2 o'clock or something. And I think Earlier on today, the market went down to 6,000. This morning it hit 6,000, pretty much spot on, I think. And then it rebounded. And if we can close where we are now, which is sort of like just positive, then we'll get a bit of a hammer candle, which suggests we might try to bounce early next week. Now, whether that means we're going to go on to the moon, I doubt it very much. I think it probably means we're going to be doing a bit of sideways chop. And, you know, I think things are going to be difficult for a while, to be honest.
We spoke about this in the last podcast, Pete, regarding those averages. And we spoke about there being support around 6,020, was it around that sort of figure?
Yeah.
And that we were trapped between the 6 and the 6.3.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to remain there. And that trap door at 6,000 is a very, very important support. We need to keep that support. Otherwise, we end up in no man's land, you know, sub 6. And a lot of the analysts and the technical people like round numbers. So below 6,000, we're heading lower. And then it's a case of we're looking again at 5.9. We don't hold 5.9. We're looking at the next numbers and in between.
Yeah, I think.
You've got the individuals that are watching the Fibonacci levels as well.
So
we need to watch those as well, because there's certain triggers for that. But within all of that, you've still got all these stocks which are going to be finding different types of support depending on what sectors that they're in. So going back to what you're saying, you're now seeing a bearish sort of trigger on the 1321. Exponential is even more important than EMA. That's the most important part of it. So you've got to be mindful to watch these sort of triggers. So that's, you know, to answer Ewan's question, that's why it's important to keep an eye on those sort of levels.
Yeah, and you know, like we say, the when you test a 1321 day EMA over a period of time, you'll find for all sorts of assets, it's an incredibly good predictor. So, you know, that's why I particularly like it, obviously. I've got a question here from Ben Sherman. Hi, Ben. We know Ben well. Do you think the FTSE 100 will be higher or lower on the 31st of December? Great to see you both. Well, great to see you, Ben. Well, sort of see you. I mean, that's a difficult one. I mean, nobody really knows. I mean, my sort of hunch, and it's literally a hunch based on nothing, is I'm expecting the summer to be, you know, grinding and difficult, you know. So for the next 4 weeks, whatever, I think we could just, you know, drift and be a bit of up and down and be choppy and whatever. My real worry is that heading into late August, September, we get into that classic autumn period where there's so often a big sell-off. And I think that could happen. I don't think that is impossible at all, because you'll get talk of second waves, you'll get all these spikes of infection around the world, you'll have fears over the recession. It'll be pretty obvious that Rishi Sunak's pumping money can't go on forever. So I think, you know, there's a good chance we'll drop, you know, around sort of autumn time. But then the chances are we'll rally, because often winter is good. You know, November, December tend to be good time. I think December is the strongest month. So, you know, would a FTSE be higher or lower on the 31st of December? If I was going to guess, I'd say it'd probably go down and then end up pretty much where it is. It might be 6.4, 6.5, but, you know, who knows? And you've got presidential election as well.
My view on it is the fact that we are going to have a bit of a lull during the summer. I think potentially with regards to the US elections, that's going to be a big talking point, and lots of ads going out and lots of spending going on to promote the two candidates there. I think what we've got to look out for is potential.
Mate, don't forget Kanye West.
Forget about Kanye West. Don't even go there. Don't mention that name. So you're throwing up a speed of thought now. Anyway, as you always do.
Your brain's tired from this morning. You had a tough session with Martin Sorrell. Well done.
So my thoughts is a lull during the summer, as you said. I said the big caveat is stimulus here, because we've had lots of stimulus from Rishi Sunak. And my suspicion is that the lots of companies at the moment, the biggest ones, you know, saying what they were saying this week about job cuts and all the rest of it, significantly, yeah, John Lewis coming out and saying we're going to get rid of X amount of jobs tells you how bad it is at the moment in the retail sector. If John Lewis's is in difficulty. Lots of retail are going to be in difficulty. So I suspect that Rishi Sunak, with the furlough scheme, is going to extend that prior to October. So there's a rollover before October saying we're going to extend. And if he does that and throws that wall of money, not only at construction, but at all of the employment sectors, I think we could then get a little bit of another push, which will then coincide with the elections in the US, and they're going to be throwing money at that because, you know, Donald and his team want to be re-elected. So pay no mind to the fact that Biden's leading in the polls at the moment. It means nothing. There's a long way to go between now and October, November.
The presidential debates will have a big impact.
Yeah. So my view, to answer your question, and I always pronounce it Ben Sharman, so maybe I'm wrong. Is that the markets will stay around this sort of level between 6.6 and 6.3 between now and September. We'll hear more about the stimulus potentially from Rishi Sunak, so there's not a wall of unemployment, because unemployment will just drag the market down. So where we are now, 6 to 6.3, we could stay there or thereabouts and fall out the trapdoor and back up again for the next couple of months. December, stimulus, second wave of stimulus, second wave positive. And if we can deal with the COVID situation, it's not as bad as we fear, and it doesn't coincide with the flu, the flu season. And we can deal with that, and it's not huge COVID mess again, and they deal with it strategically. I think we'll be higher than we are now in December, irrespective of who wins the US elections.
Yeah, I think that sounds plausible. I mean, something to mention quickly on the COVID thing. My hunch, again, a hunch based on nothing, is I really can't see a full lockdown happening again. And I sort of base this on a few things. I mean, something I picked up somewhere, I was watching whatever, was that apparently the government has been really surprised by how bad the economic impact is. When they went into lockdown, I think when they went into lockdown originally, they expected a lot more people to carry on working. And what actually happened was they scared everyone so much that loads of people didn't go to work who they thought would. And I think that's had more impact than they expected. And I think the simple fact is we cannot afford to have a full lockdown again as a country. I just don't think the financial resources are there. And I think there's a bit of a fantasy going on at the moment. We seem to think that the central bank will, Bank of England will forever print money and bail us out. I don't think that's really going to happen. There has to be a limit. You cannot just do it forever. So, I think we need to be careful relying on central banks saving us and there being another full lockdown. I think you'll get individual lockdowns, like you've got in Leicester, mate. But I don't think we're going to see a full lockdown.
I mean, we may not, Pete, but I still think we're going to see a second round of stimulus. And I think the reason why is the importance of sentiment. And the fact that, if we do cut it off in September, which is a possibility, and at the moment they're not saying anything differently, is that you've then got that wall of companies going, we can't go back to work. We've lost that contract. And therefore the furlough scheme is finished. So we are now announcing that we've got rid of numbers of staff. Mm. And what Rishi Sunak and the Conservative government do not want is to see that wall of unemployment, because the furlough scheme might not be continuing, but then you've got that wall of hundreds of thousands of people going on to claim another set of assets and financial support, which is the benefit system. And at the moment with the furlough scheme, at least they're looking to get that back from the companies that they've loaned it to. It's not free money. These companies at some stage have to pay that back to the government, or at least that's my understanding.
No, I think the furlough one is actually free. It is a grant. I think it is free money as such. Although I don't know.
Is all of it free money, Pete?
Well, no, there's the COVID loan, which is another thing. That's a loan and that has to be paid back.
So,
On the stimulus thing, it's pretty clear that Rishi is going to do an autumn budget. And I think that will be a big bazooka. I, th- I I think there's an argument to say that in the spending statement he did this week, he didn't do enough. You know, it's almost like he should have gone even bigger just to really stimulate the economy. And it's almost like he hasn't done enough. It's almost like they're in a holding pattern, just seeing how it goes. And then in autumn, they're going to have to absolutely welly it.
Okay, Dave. I'm just going to look. I wanted to raise this anyway, but somebody's raised it. And they've called themselves another one. Anonymous attendee. Hello, anonymous attendee.
Oh, right. Okay.
Hello there. What is your view on Boo in light of the recent Times findings? What does it mean for the stock price in the near future? Now, I was going to raise this, so I'll start this one off, Pete.
Mate, can we cover Boo quickly and then go back to the two questions above?
Yeah.
I don't want to miss the questions, yeah.
No, that's absolutely fine. My thoughts, and it's nothing to do with the fact that I live in Leicestershire, is that Boo, the share price, has been impacted. It will continue to be impacted because of ESG. And I say that regarding environmental social governance. There are lots of ethical funds out there that were and were planning and were going to be investors in Boo. And for the moment, until this issue is addressed, they have been reducing the positions in their funds. They've been selling out of that. I don't think all of them have finished yet. The news that came out yesterday caused the share price to spike 30% at one stage, I believe. So the share price had hit something like £1.97. And yesterday, I think it touched £3 or thereabouts.
Yeah. And it was above £3.
Above £3. So the traders that were trading it were in from £3, £2.50, £2.20, and then going like that, you know, a little bit worried. And then the news came out Wednesday night, Thursday morning. So it was rejoiced. So the shorters that were still shorting the stock and wanting it to go even lower, and the hedge funds that were shorting the stock and wanted it to go lower, they had to close their positions, which gave Boo a really sharp move and spike upwards. So all of the traders that were bullish from £3 and down were rejoicing and was quickly selling out of their positions from £2.70, £18.90, and £3. So they've now sold their positions. The long-term shareholders that have bought the shares with a view to holding it and thinking they've got a bargain, they're looking to hold on to the share. But what I would caveat that and say, one of the things you've got to be concerned about is sometimes when a share price halves, it doesn't necessarily give you a bargain, because if the dynamics and the macro issues have changed for that company, you are no longer getting a 50% bargain in the sale for Boo or any other company. Because if the dynamics change significantly, it means that you've got that drag regarding the actual issue on the shares, always pulling it back down towards £2 or £3, but never ever allowing it to spring back to £4 at the recent high that it had at, I think it was 4.33 or something like that. So beware of that. The other thing I would add as well is there's bound to be further investigations, further videos, further stuff being said by other individuals that have a viewpoint regarding sweatshops, slave trade, if you want to call it that, and factories not actually looking after their employees. If it's happening in Leicester, if it's happening in the Midlands, happening in London, if it's happening elsewhere in the UK, it's going to be massive news, because that shouldn't be happening in this era of the 21st century of safety and looking after everybody. And in the COVID environment, it means that any factory that's got people working in it that are putting themselves at risk because they can't afford to not be at work, because they won't get furloughed, you know, or they're working and they're actually illegal immigrants and working, that's going to create a whole ball of wax regarding the supply chain for lots of companies as well as Boohoo. So be mindful. My view on the share price is it's going to be trapped between £2 and £4, and it may not get back to £4 for a good while until the dust has settled and they actually address the issues for the institutions that are funds related to ethical investing and other funds as well. They might stay away.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I'm long on Boo. I've held Boo for years and I've got no intention of selling it. I think Pete's right that you know, the ESG issues where you have ESG funds are a big concern with Boo. And I think that could be a drag on them for a while. My bigger fear, in a way, the one that I'm really worried about, I'll explain more in a second, is I'm worried about the social media influencers moving away from Boo. That would be a big problem, I think. There was, I think, one or two people it was mentioned had, you know, sort of said, oh, no, we're going away from Boo. We won't be doing that again. But I also picked up something yesterday, someone sent me on Twitter kindly, was that Umar Kamani, that, you know, the son of the guy who run, effectively set it up. He's actually a bit of a social media personality himself, and he knows a lot of these people. And it's pretty obvious that he's going out stroking a few cats and saying everything's fine, don't worry, you know. So I think, and at the end of the day, these influencers are going to go where their bread's buttered, you know. A lot of clothes are sold by Boohoo. They've got good relationships with the company, you know, so I think that will help.
Can I caveat that, though? One of the other significant issues is if they lose, get my words right, sorry. If they lose,
it's a long day.
Lose their contracts and supply chains with regards to Amazon, Next, ASOS, and others, and with John Lewis, I'm not sure if they've ever actually held Boohoo clothes, but if you lose that supply chain and lose that massive sort of shop window for Amazon and ASOS and others, that is significant, Pete. So you need to be mindful that they're already on a high PE. The IP has come down, but the revenues could continue. The revenues could continue. Therefore, the PE becomes more reasonable. But long term, if Amazon said, nah, we're not going to touch them again, not going to supply them again ever, because, and everyone knows that Amazon has had their own issues. Do you know what I mean? So this could be a vanity thing for Amazon, who knows, but be mindful of all these different scenarios, because, you know, Boohoo is done exceptionally well. And I said this to somebody who asked me on DM, what do I think of Boohoo, yesterday. And I said, be very careful, because the media likes to build up, you know, sportsmen and sportswomen and all the rest of it, as well as individuals, as well as companies, and equally knock them right down as soon as they mess up. So just be mindful, you know, that it may not be Flavor Flav as it was and is, up until about a week ago.
Yeah. On that subject of Amazon, whatever, they clarified this 2 days ago or whatever in the statement they put out, where they effectively said that last year, 4% of their revenues came through that kind of, what they call it, wholesaling or something, don't they? 4% of revenues. This year, it had actually dropped to 1.5% of revenues. They're doing more through their own websites. So, you know, I think that's probably quite a marginal issue. Again, it's a reputational thing. It's not great. But, I mean, the other thing to consider, I think there's a bigger ESG thing, which is the whole fast fashion thing. And this isn't just a problem for Boohoo. It's a problem for Primark, where, you know, you got cheap throwaway clothes that someone bungs on for one night and then they chuck in the bin. I mean, you know, I think there's a big issue there. And I think Boohoo need to do more at pushing the environmental credentials. And perhaps, you know, it's almost like we need to come up with more environmental produced clothing that's like made out of coconuts or something, you know, so that we get away from this problem with fast fashion. I think that's gonna be a dogma for years.
I agree, Pete, but the problem we've got with it is the fact we've gotten used to having cheap clothing.
Yeah.
You know, people, you know, going on holiday, how many t-shirts do I want? I want 5 different colors, different design. Oh, I can have 5 for 20 quid. Oh, I'll have that. You know, don't want 5 for 100 quid. Unless I'm sporting that label, you know, I want the cheap stuff, throw it around the beach, come back from holidays, bin it, move on to the next, you know, wave of clothing.
That's exactly it. Can we move on to another question? Here's a question.
Go for it.
Question from Tim. Do you ever short stocks by spread betting or CFDs? And if so, how do you decide on which stocks to short? Thanks, Tim. Now, for me personally, I rarely short a stock. I find it's quite difficult to do, which is one reason I don't like doing it. The other thing is that you run that risk that if something happens that's good news, the rallies are so sharp, you know, you're stopped out in seconds, or if you don't have a stop, you're in trouble. It's very difficult to do. I often short using indexes, and I think that's relatively, you know, useful thing to do. The other thing you can do is you can short sectors. And I remember back in 2008, the credit crunch, I shorted the bank sector and I shorted the retail sector, and that really worked a treat. And then you remove that individual company risk, but you're playing a pretty big theme that's, you know, that's probably going to work for you. The other advantage of sector bets and with index bets is they use lower margin, so you get more bang for your buck. Problem being with your short stocks, you're often 20% margin, which is flipping lot. Whereas with on, say, a FTSE 100 short, you're only 5% margin. So, you know, have you ever done anything like that, Pete?
I very rarely short stocks. I very rarely spread bet these days. When I first started out, I was like one of those young pups going, easy money, quick money, quick money.
And then after jumping around, yeah, all the numbers.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, a beautiful platform there for me. And I'm just entranced like that going in there. And, you know, 3 months, 6 months down the line, I was thinking, just can't seem to get this to work for me. You know, and I wasn't very good at it, Pete. And I donated some money to a lovely platform. And I thought, there's got to be a better way for me to potentially get better at investing without trading. So I haven't gone back to it that much. Very rarely do I put a spread bet on, if at all. And I'll either go to cash. And I said at a couple of podcasts before that I edged my portfolio for about 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And then I was like, nah, I'm done with that, you know, and moved on. So, yeah, I very rarely spread bet.
On the questions again, there's one from Michael Buckley. What advice, well, we don't give advice, so let's skip that word. What advice would you give to those investors who sold large percentage of their stock in March 2020 and many other investors still holding cash since 2019? What signs should those investors be patiently waiting to see in order to get back in? Is it an index level, economic forecast, or post what percentage drop?
Right, I'll take the first part of that question. For me, brilliant question. Thank you for sharing that question. I've had this question quite a few times from people that have been cashed up or significantly cashed up. And when I say that, I mean that right now their portfolio is plus 50% cash. And for me, the significant level on the FTSE is 6.5, okay? If we can get above that level, then a lot of people that are sitting in cash, including institutions, will think, you know what? We've gone past that level there where we've had what I call the W format. I think it's a W sort of recovery we're going to have. So we've gone down, we've gone up, we're looking to go back down to 6, and then we're starting to go back up again. Once we get past on this other part of the W on this side, at 6.5, that potentially could be actually quite a good momentum to see us going back towards 7. And if we get to 7, I think there'd be a wall of money being thrown at the market. Will that be because of stimulus? Will that be because there's a vaccine? Will that be because whomever has got into the presidency in the US? Or will that just
be... economic improvement.
Or general economic, because the thing is, we open and we've got the lockdown. Sorry, we're no longer in lockdown. And more people going back to work. All those horrible numbers we've had coming from various companies in March, April, May, June, now July, all these companies saying we're getting rid. If we see some of these numbers dropping off and there's less and less companies saying we're reducing our staff, we're not opening again, you know, X is going into bankruptcy. And that ties in with stimulus or ties in with the right results in October, November, December. If we get that rally in October, November, December time, we're going to be hedging above 6.5, 6.5, 6.6, 6.7. And that sentiment around Christmas time when people tend to be wanting to look at the year end of the actual calendar year, we could then go from 6.5 and above. So for me, 6.5, and I said this to Pete on the last podcast, that is a significant level. You've got to get past 6.3.5 first, but 6.5 is I think, a significant point where some money could be rejoining the market to get that crest of momentum towards 7.
I mean,
your thoughts, Pete?
Well, I'm conscious of the times. So I'm not sure what time we're supposed to end this, but anyway, what I'm thinking is it's also partly, I would say, if you've got a big cash pile, keep your eyes open, look for good, interesting companies at reasonable valuations, and just nibble here and there. You don't need to go mad. Don't go putting 10% of your portfolio into a particular stock. But, you know, buy 2% of it or 1% of your portfolio in a particular stock if you see it, you know, and sort of take advantage along the curve, if you like. You know, I wouldn't be going crazy at the moment, but if you've got a lot of cash, feed a little bit in if you see companies you like and you're happy to buy them. And if you're a long-term investor, you can start buying some of it and then you could buy more lower down or whatever. So, you know, average into your position over time. Pete, I'm getting a message that we need to finish fairly soon, so I don't know if you just want to tie things up.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine.
I'm try and capture the questions we haven't answered, and we'll try to answer them on a future podcast or whatever, yeah?
Yeah. I wanted to answer one more question, if I may, a very quick one. Do you guys average down on losing investments, or do you automatically cut losses losing investment? If so, what percentage would you exit? What is the largest percentage of your portfolio? How many questions is there in one question? And that's AA85 again, who was on the Sir Martin Sorrell interview. So hello there, AA5 again. I'll answer part of that question, and unfortunately that will have to be our last one. I think it's useful sometimes to average down. I think if you've got a conviction in the stock, and I mentioned this before regarding having cash on your portfolio, if you're fully invested in a portfolio and the situation happened as it did in February, March and April of this year, you're not able to buy the stock that you really got a conviction with 30, 40, 50% lower. So having the cash available allows you to average down. And we've seen the significant moves just recently on Rock Resources, RRE. We've seen it on Games Workshop. We've seen it on Frontier Developments. You know, these are stocks that were down 30, 40% and more. And now they've rallied since the March, April lows. So if you're able to, and you've got the conviction and you've got the patience, it can work. But you have to have done your research in the stock to make sure that it's not something that's going to end up capitulating. Okay, I'm really sorry, but we've been told to go.
Yeah.
And thank you much for coming on to this podcast. This podcast is brought to you by SharePad with ShareScope. Pete and I, you can find us on Twitter at Conquers3 and at Wheelie Dealer. And we look forward to speaking to you, ladies and gents, again, wherever you are in the world. Thank you ever so much for joining us. Take care.
Bye.
God bless. Bye-bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.